board meeting, but as we know, this is an extension and just finalizing the meeting that we were having last Thursday, July 16th. And basically, all we're going to do today is do board member committee and liaison reports. So usually, I guess I could say that we have a quorum, and unfortunately, Director Rice will not be in attendance this morning, but we have other members of the board, as well as members of staff as well. And we have a number of attendees, so thank you for participating as well. I guess I could mention who those are. And we have, well, I guess I'm one of those attendees. That's funny. Christine Heinrich, Karen Dean, and Stephen Allen are attending as well. So thank you so much. Normally, we wouldn't necessarily do a Pledge of Allegiance or anything else, but I thought as a result of the passing of Congressman, social and civil rights activist, and just great human being, John Lewis, because of his passing this past Friday, I thought I would read three quotes of his that I feel would be reminders to us as to how to live our lives in these very unsettled and troubled and challenging times. And so this is one that I slowly edited, and then two brief ones after that. So the first one is, you are a light. You are the light. Never let anyone, any person, or any force dampen, dim, or diminish your light. Steady the path of others to make your way easier and more abundant. Lean toward the whispers of your own heart. Discover the universal truth and follow its dictates. When it is your time, don't be afraid to stand up, speak out, and speak out against injustice. And if you follow your truth down the road to peace and the affirmation of love, if you shine like a beacon for all to see, then the poetry of all the great dreamers and philosophers is yours to manifest in a nation, a world community, and a beloved community that is finally at peace with itself. Here are two other quotes. Nothing can stop the power of a committed and determined people to make a difference in society. Why? Because human beings are the most dynamic link to the divine on the planet. And then finally, get in good trouble, necessary trouble, and help redeem the soul of America. And there's a documentary out available right now called John Lewis, Good Trouble. So I thought it was worth reading those words. There are many other quotes that you can find online, obviously, but I just wanted to acknowledge the tremendous contribution that Congressman Lewis made during his life, first as an activist and then as a congressman for almost 40 years. So let's now move forward to board member committee and liaison reports. And I hope nobody minds, but I'm going to do my president's report last. So I hope that doesn't make anyone feel uncomfortable. Vice President Steidel, if you don't mind, if you could give your finance committee report, please.
Thank you, President Farmer. I don't have a great deal to provide at this point. The Finance Committee, of course, had reviewed the preliminary budget and had passed recommendation to the board previously. We are meeting later this month for our July meeting, and that meeting will include a review of the final budget, which will be coming to the board in August. And that takes care of it for me.
That was pretty brief. Thank you so much. Policy Committee report, Director Howe, do you have anything? Anything of import?
Yes. Can you hear me all right, everybody? Okay, this is short, just to let you know what's, pardon me here, what's up. We have two items coming up to the board for your review, and hopefully you'll pass it. One has to do with modifications to our municipal code regarding transfer of development credits to lots with, there was some omitted verbiage in the original code, which according to our committee, we felt needed to be additional words added to accomplish the intent, the stated intent of the code. So I suspect that once you've read the change, which you'll see is quite minimal, it's probably a very good candidate for a consent agenda. And I've sent that forward to the executive committee and to Mr. Weigold. In addition, the other question, the other matter which is coming again before you is the question regarding reimbursement of committee members' expenses. And again, this is a very short piece of, it's a short paragraph, again, probably good for some consent agenda. And again, I have passed that to the executive committee. Actually, the change to the municipal code may require more than the consent agenda, I just suddenly realized, because Mr. Carmel, I think when we're changing our code, we have to do a great deal more than just pass a motion. As probably, yeah. So those are the two things which I hope to that will be coming up soon, for no other reason than the policy committee has been working hard, but they haven't had a lot of positive feedback from our board. So I think it's important that we deal with these matters as quickly as we can so that they can get some feedback and can maintain their enthusiasm for their work. At our next meeting, we have a number of items that were coming forward just very briefly. And that meeting, by the way, will be week after next. We will be, there will be just a report, but no action or minimal discussion regarding policies related to people experiencing homelessness. That's a very large issue, and there's three people presently working on this. I really don't know where they're going to end up, but they have been working hard on that, and I'm hoping to get a progress report on that point. Another item, we have several other items here. Yes, we will be discussing and considering, no, we will just be discussing the issue of who answers correspondence to the board. This is where correspondence has been addressed to the board as a whole, and then the question becomes, well, who gets the pleasure of having to answer those letters. My concern here, and I actually brought this forward to the policy committee, had to do with the fact that I often receive correspondence addressed to all of us with no knowledge as to whether anybody has any responsibility for answering those notes. And I'm very reluctant to answer them on my own because I can't speak for the whole board. So it is an issue that needs to be addressed. The other thing which we had been asked to deal with has to do with our records retention policy and our email management issues. That will be coming forward for discussion and consideration. It's rather extensive, I think. I've just reviewed a little bit about what our subcommittee has done, but we'll get more about that. And the other thing which will be of interest to all of you is we have been dealing with the issue of a recommended policy for filling vacancies on the board of directors should the resignation or something occur. So we will be discussing, I think we will be discussing and considering that one also. So we have a couple of series of things where we are going to take some votes. That's the extent of our meeting week after next. I certainly invite anyone listening, please come and join us. In addition, just to let you know where we are, I'm hoping that we can bring a draft the beginnings of a draft policy regarding purchasing, which had been something put on our plate some time ago. I'm hoping that we will be able to bring something forward at our August meeting for that. Presently, there's only two of us working on this, and it's basically myself, which I'd like to get off of that and let the committee work on it, because I already know what I think about all this stuff. We need to hear what they have to say. And also, I'm having enough to do, so I'd like to spread the work around a bit. But hopefully that will come up in August. The only other thing to mention on that, I've asked and been very pleased with the staff here. I've asked that the policy committee meetings be conducted as regular Zoom meetings rather than webinars, because I've had some comments from the public, and I've also felt that for these less formal, at least for the policy, I can't speak for the other two committees. For us, it's, I think, useful to try to encourage the public to interact a little more fully with us by allowing them to be seen and that they can see who else is attending and see other people's reactions. And I have had some good feedback on that. So far, unless it gets out of hand, I would really like to continue with that format. We are still able to get our work done. And as I said, as long as as we have the protocols for dealing with a group in this virtual format, as long as those protocols are working, I see no reason not to continue in that fashion. And so that's my report, and I look forward to for fellow directors, feel free to sit in the audience and not say anything. I have to tell you that I actually value my time being able to be a fly on the wall in your meeting, in your subcommittee, in your committee meetings. It's been very useful to me and saves a lot of board time because I often get the explanations of material that I would otherwise be asking at a board meeting. Anyway, thank you for this time.
All right. Thank you, Don. By the way, if you don't mind mentioning when the next policy committee meeting is.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. Yes, it is not next week, but the Thursday of the following week. The date escapes me at the moment, but it's a week from, a week from this Thursday. Let me check my calendar. Now you have me wondering. Hold on a minute. Is that right?
It's 2:30 on the 30th.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President. So, and that is week after, it's next week? Is it next week? Yes, it's next week. Correct. Sorry. I just lost a week.
Nothing to be sorry about. let's move forward now to Resources and Infrastructure Committee report. And Director Pearson, good morning. Need to unmute.
Good morning. Good morning. I've written a report that will become part of the minutes, and I think Haley is going to bring that up on the screen for me. So that you can all read along with me. The R&I Standing Committee report, we reviewed the PG&E IGA update meeting of June 3rd. The attached, it goes into some detail. Would you scroll down to that, Haley? There you go. This gives you an idea as to what they reported out to us, PG&E and their engineers. These cost estimates are still very rough. They said plus or minus 20%, but they did differ considerably on some of them from what they had originally given us back in January, February, or whenever it was. Some key things here, the replacement of the transformer for a four-wire service, that application is moving forward, and they do think that by the time we get around to proceeding with a contract, they'll be ready to move right ahead on that one. So that's good news. ECM number four, you know, we have three blowers out there and they're all ancient. So what they decided with in agreement with the staff was that they would replace one of those blowers with a brand new one and then refurbish the other two and have them ready for standby, which I thought was a good money-saving opportunity. Some of the other ones, the generator replacement cost a little bit more than it had before. That's ECM number eight on the list there. They did give us a number to go with tertiary treatment, which we don't need to do at this point in time, but they've got it out there, a little over $1 million. An important one, I think, anyway, was the lift station upgrades to A, B1, B4. That's replacing the pumps and refurbishing those lift stations and getting the pumps out of the pit and up where they can work on them without having to go into a confined space. That will save a lot of labor because if you have a confined space, you have to have three people on site. So that makes it very problematic. They also did the water systems at our request. Remember, we asked them to go ahead and at least give us an idea on the water systems. So they gave us a price to upgrade all the pumps out at the San Simeon well field and SR4. You see that one. Then they talked about replacing the booster pumps, which are located mostly at tanks, but also at the rodeo grounds. And that $3 million figure, most of that money is for actually moving the rodeo grounds facility about 75 yards to the other side of Rodeo Grounds Road and out of the floodplain. They also put a number on replacing the domestic water tanks. They had the Stewart Street tanks in particular, a plan for that, where there are two plans. Either one, they could build one new, larger tank on that site, or they could refurbish the two that are there and replace those. I think the domestic water tank replacement that they had, figure that they gave us was for more than Stewart Street, because I can't imagine that that's $2 million. But I have not gotten clarification on that yet. And since these are still rough figures, I think we're pretty good to move along here. They also gave us pricing on doing the Vetsol lighting replacement, which I would hope they would do right away. Street lighting replacement, they came up with about $17,000 to replace those with solar. They have a very limited choice, and we let them know that before they chose fixture, we needed to talk to our dark skies committee and make sure that whatever fixture they had kind of met their requirements. So San Simeon Wellfield solar array, they gave us a shot for that just to let us know what that was going to cost. They did not have any payback or anything like that for that particular field, but it basically where our pumps are out there, SS1 and SS2 is where they would put this solar array and feed back into the grid, because hooking it right to our facility, we have way more power than we need for right there at the pump station. So they feed it back and they give us a credit for that against our bill and all that kind of thing. So any questions on any of that briefly? Okay, Haley, if you'll scroll back up to the top there.
David, if I could just make a quick comment.
Sure.
You were talking about the cost of the water tank replacement and why that, I seem to recall, it was about $1.4 million, something like that. If they were just going to replace the small tank which is the one that certainly needs attention as quickly as possible. And I believe the cost of that was going to be, let's say, probably about $450,000. But I believe that PG&E was also considering, remember they showed us that diagram of removing the current two tanks and building a larger tank. So just having one out there, and maybe that's the reason that the cost is more than we would have anticipated, because it's about building a totally new, much larger tank taking place of the other two. So that may be the reason for the added cost.
Very good. Thank you for helping out with that. The R&I committee also established an ad hoc committee to help with the SST funding and keeping informed on the progress. We began talking about developing a CIP for the general fund departments, PROS facilities, and the fire admin. And then, of course, future work for us is going to be working on some kind of an asset management policy to get us a list of all the things that we have and making sure we're keeping track of those. So, Mr. President, with your permission, I'll go ahead and hit my liaison reports very quickly.
Go right ahead. Thank you.
All right. The Fire Safe Focus Group got a presentation on fire insurance, which was really very, very informative. There was a fire. There was an insurance agent who's been in business up in the Tascadero for close to 30 years who attended the meeting and gave us a great report on what we could expect and what was going on with insurance, and in particular fire insurance in the Cambria area. We're going to have a wildfire preparedness day October 10th, if we can do so with the COVID restrictions that will be in place by that time. We plan on having some of it inside the Vets Hall, but spread apart, and some of it outside. Sweeping the broom efforts in Cambria continue. If you notice piles around and that kind of thing, those are French broom that has been plucked out of the ground and stacked there so that at some point in time they'll either be burned or whatever. You're not supposed to take those away because they spread the seeds if you do that. So, but those efforts are continuing. There were some great pictures of the stands of these things that were 10 and 12 feet tall up behind Fog's End, Mr. Beringer's property. They cleaned all that out, and then they cleaned all the way around by Covell Ranch and that kind of thing. There was a lot of it up in there. We had six very successful chipping days held July 6th and 7th. 43 piles of fuel were chipped. Over 24 tons of material was carted off. This year, we did not require that the property owner take the chips back onto their property. We decided to pay the little bit extra and have it carted off. So that was a help for getting, I think, more people to participate. CERT activities coming up, just to let everybody know. If there's a red flag day, the CERT teams will be out there on fire patrol looking and making sure, driving around the communities and looking for incipient fires. And if there's a public safety power shutoff, which is the PG&E thing, that if they think there's going to be a possibility of a spark causing a fire, they will shut down, okay? And if they do shut down, the CERT team, once again, will be going around town looking for people to help out, et cetera, et cetera. It's interesting that the Presbyterian Church up by Burton up there signed a contract with PG&E to be a center, power center, so that people can go there and recharge things and they'll have generators, et cetera, at that point. Evacuation, we continue working on the evacuation plan. PG&E grant for fuel reduction in the Tin City area. We were able to get a grant Chief Hollingsworth and the Fire Safe Council applied for a FEMA grant to clean up the area between Tin City and the middle school. Okay, it's basically right there along as you come down the hill on Burton. Okay, off there to the right, there's a lot of dead trees in there and a lot of invasive plants. And we applied for a grant with FEMA. Well, they didn't have enough money, so they had us kind of waiting. So meanwhile, a PG&E grant opportunity came up, so we applied for that, and we were successful. So in the next 3 or 4 months, they will be going in there, and they will be taking out all of the dead trees and dying trees, and they'll be cleaning that area out of invasive plants and that kind of thing. So that'll be a real good thing. PG&E gave us that grant because apparently in the last 10 years, there have been 2 or 3 fires in that area caused by their equipment. There's another website that you might want to go out to called alertwildfire.org. This is cameras that are up on top of the mountains in the area, and they're using those to spot fires early and make alerts and stuff. But you can go out there and actually look yourself. You can't pan the cameras as they can, but you can look and see. And there is a camera up on top of Rocky Butte, you know, so very interesting to go out there and take a look at that. The NCAC meetings, there's been 2 of them since our last report. Supervisor Gibson was basically talking about 3 different things on those 2 meetings. One was all the budget cuts that they had to look at and when they passed their preliminary budget because of the lack of sales tax, etc. He's really concerned about more homeless due to COVID-19 and what we're going to be able to do to help those people out. And the last thing was he was very happy that the people's self-help housing was approved by the Coastal Commission. The representative from the Planning Commission, Siong, had talked about the fact that there's going to be a housing update due to the Board of Supervisors in September. And I was not exactly clear as to exactly what that was going to look like, but apparently they're changing their ordinances some on that. So that's where they're going to be. Last things here, FFRP did a little presentation on a wind farm that is being planned off our coast. It'll only be about 15 to 20 miles away, and so you'll be able to see it. And they're looking at closing off parts of Main Street, probably just the parking areas in front of the restaurants, and some of the other businesses. If you've been to SLO, they've already done that, okay? If you go along the main streets there, they have actually blocked off some of the parking so that those restaurants will be able to move more tables and chairs outside so that they'll be able to remain open. So they're looking at doing that in parts of Main Street here in Cambria to help out our restaurants. And last, John Rohrbach did a very nice job of going over CambriaCA.org, which is his little newspaper that he's publishing every week. If you haven't been out there to look at that, I think it's worthwhile. So, and that's my report. Thank you.
Well, thank you, David. I just want to comment with regard to, I believe Morro Bay had, where they extended the restaurant dining areas out into the street. They called them parklets. And when I was in town on Saturday, I noticed that there's 2 restaurants in the West Village that already have areas extending out into the street, Madeline's Restaurant and also the West End Bar and Grill. And I spoke with the folks at the Cambria Cafe in the East Village, and they're going to be putting, the lady there told me that they're going to be putting dining areas out in the street sometime. It might have been Sunday or very early this week. So that's an update on that.
Good.
And they did those by the way, I just want to mention a couple of years ago, they did those in Morro Bay as well. They had 2 of them for about 6 months. but what ultimately happened, and I don't think this is going to occur here, but they ultimately took them down because it was removing too much parking. But the thing is, down there, in Morro Bay, they have parallel parking, where here we have diagonal parking. So it's having quite as much of an effect. So I just wanted to mention that. Thank you.
Mr. President?
David, Director Howell.
Just very briefly, since Director Pearson mentioned the Cambria CA online newspaper, I just reviewed it yesterday, and I wanted to mention that I thought the president's, your article in there, Mr. President, was very good and is certainly worth others reading. And I just wanted to, it was an opportunity for me to mention that at this point. It was a good job. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you very much, Director Howell. And I'm actually going to be reading that entry here momentarily. Anyone else have any comments on Director Pearson's presentations before we move forward? Vice President Steidel, I don't believe you have any liaison reports. Is that correct? Or am I wrong?
No, that's correct, President Farmer.
Okay, thank you. You have enough on your plate as it is, so thank you. So I think what I'll do right now, oh, by the way.
Farmer, I'm sorry, Director Howell had something that he wanted to add.
Actually, I do realize I did have a very brief liaison report to mention, which probably the Tyler Encode thing. I just wanted to let you all know, was a fly on the wall this morning. They're starting now to work directly with some of the developers, Pam is, to actually get the parameters of our system. So there is real progress being made on this, and they're going to be working for the next 3 days on this. I just wanted to mention that I just sat as a fly on the wall for the first hour of their meeting together this morning, and it was extremely impressive. I think we're all going to be very pleased when this is all done, and it's going to definitely be worth the cost. Of what it was this morning was an examination going into our chart of accounts and of the various way that the finances, the various processes are handled. And I learned more in that 1 hour than I have in the year and three quarters that I've been on the board. As to how our operations are going. And the one thing that I did see, and this is not a criticism to anybody, but just to comment on how much of our processes are manual. So if you're wondering why sometimes it takes a long time to get things done, that's the reason. We are way back. We're about 20 years behind the curve on this one. So this is just a very, very positive thing. And really looking forward to this going forward. But anyway, I just thought I should mention that. It was in the top of my mind this morning because that was the meeting I just came out of.
Well, Director Howell, perhaps at our next board meeting, you could take a little more time and give us more detail as to what it is that you learned and suggestions you can make for us moving forward as a board in a district. So it looks like, I want to mention, and I really appreciate what Director Pearson did in having a printed out report as opposed to it just being, read. And that suggestion was actually made this morning by our local activist, Elizabeth Vettenhausen, who last I looked wasn't attending this meeting. She's probably out walking. No, I still don't see her here. She's probably still out, although Elizabeth has joined the meeting. She was out walking along the beach. So she suggested that all of us in our reports type them out and then make them available at obviously at the district website. And also they can be seen on the screen while we're reading them. So I've got a little bit to report here. And so I'm going to start with the Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve June and July meetings. First off, Facilities and Resources head, Carlos Mendoza, who obviously does work on the ranch. He updated the work that had been done there, the fact that the fire breaks were finished, including removing debris and branches from trails, the wood chips from the trees were used for landscaping at the Veterans Hall. They also made use of a grant of $5,000 to put up new interpretive signs. I don't know if any of you have walked out there. They're really very attractive. There's a presentation of needed information regarding plants, trails, birds, and animal life, and so forth. Plus, they have mutton knit bags and other information. And these are at the Tipton and Clinton entrances to the ranch, as well as at the fire road down off of Marlboro. 60 hours of volunteer time was put in on both Memorial Day and 4th of July weekends out on the ranch, down on the Bluff Trail, just welcoming visitors, answering questions, being a friendly face of FFRP. Of course, this is good for public relations and fundraising as well. On Sunday, May 24th, which was, of course, Memorial Day weekend, just from 9 a.m. to noon down on the Bluff Trail, the visitors, we had just under 250 two-legged visitors, 225 adults and 24 children, as well as 42 dogs. So that was quite a turnout. There was not as many people on the ranch on the 4th of July weekend. The beautiful weather both times, and I'm thankful to report that more people were wearing face masks on the 4th of July weekend. So people are becoming more aware of the need for that. With regard to FFRP, their website has been updated. They have new banner images there. They have an approved education page, including the field guide project from the San Lucia Middle School students, as well as a page for the Great Kitchens of Cambria. They're not having a tour this year, but they're kind of having something like a virtual tour in preparation for 2021. I also want to mention the fact that FFRP, they're looking for a new, more visible and inviting office location, hopefully still on Main Street. You may know that currently that their office is like way tucked back there by Sandy's Deli at the end of North Main Street in the West Village. And so they're looking for something that's more visible, more engaging with visitors as well as locals, to have people more involved, maybe doing more donations and so forth. I think it was Director Howe just mentioned with regard to the new site that is on social media that has been put together by John Rohrbaugh. He does an excellent job. Of course, it's called CambriaCA.org. The executive director, Kitty Connolly from FFRP, she's established a column there titled Connecting with Nature on the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve. And so you can go there to just get more more information on what's happening at the ranch. FFRP, they finally received the James Allen report. He was an arborist. He's done work with FFRP in the past, and they hired him to assess the health of the forest on the ranch and along Highway 1 after the work that was done by CAL FIRE and their crews that they hired last fall. So over 120 comments were made regarding the quality of the report from various people, including Fire Safe Council leader Dan Turner, our CSD Facilities and Resources Department head and ranch manager Carlos Mendoza, former FFRP Executive Director Joellen Butler, former FFRP Board President Walt Andrus, as well as the current Board President Mark Larson, and other folks as well. So like I said, they made over 120 comments regarding this James Allen report, and the overall consensus of the report is that it was difficult to read, filled with incorrect statements, erroneous facts, findings were often either incorrect or incomplete, and there's a possibility they may have to have a new survey done by a different consultant. They paid James Allen $12,000, and I guess you could say that they're a bit disappointed in the results of the results of his findings. Also, a couple of other items that I want to mention. At the July meeting, among other items of discussion, there was concern about the increasing number of bicycles on the ranch, and occasionally there's some conflict with the hikers, also maybe some harm being done to the trails themselves by the bicycles, and they thought perhaps that the bicycles should only be allowed on the Marine Terrace Trail, which is the fire road that extends off of Marlboro or off of Windsor and Seacliff Estates. Also, and I meant to mention this after the findings with regard to the James Allen report, there was a 45-minute discussion at the July meeting, July 9th meeting, regarding perhaps having a community meeting in late July or early August, most likely early August, since we're in late July, so to speak, already. And they would love to do this live, but it would probably be a Zoom meeting to discuss the work that was done on the ranch that we just alluded to, that especially when it first took place a few months back, the work done there was very controversial. And so what they would hope to do is have a discussion with folks, not only our own Carlos Mendoza, but members of the board of directors of FFRP, folks from the Forest Committee, as well as Green Space and the Fire Safe Council. And this meeting would be open to the public for comments to basically resolve any misunderstandings that might have taken place regarding the work that was done. So, and one other item that I want to report from the FFRP, on July 4th, there was a fawn that was attacked on the ranch by a dog that was off leash, most likely from somebody visiting from out of town. The fawn was ultimately taken to Pacific Wildlife Care, where it passed away shortly afterward. So we've just had permanent signs being posted notifying visitors of the county regulation that requires dogs be on leash at all times, and the FFRP folks are going to be enforcing that a little bit more. So so there we are with regard to FFRP. With regard to the Forest Committee, and like I say, this is a report from two different meetings, the ones in June and July. So at the June meeting, Chief Hollingsworth gave a presentation on the weed abatement program. He clarified who cares for developed and undeveloped lots. If I believe if I have my facts correct, the Cambria Fire Department is responsible for the undeveloped lots, you know, and hiring a contractor to do the work, you know, the weed abatement and that type of thing. Also, CAL FIRE is responsible for assessing developed lots, in other words, where homes are, and creating defensible space around homes, at least 30 to maybe 100 feet away from the homes. And it's been noticed the quality of the work that is done throughout the community, basically it depends on who's been hired to do the weed abatement and other clearing. Also, it was noted that more stringent rules have been imposed at the end of 2019 to require non-combustible siding on all new construction and remodels, once again, to limit the effect of fire. And also, it's important to, it was noted that it's important to ember-proof all structures to prevent fire, all homes, you know, and here in Cambria. It was also noted that CAL FIRE is still doing hazardous tree removal throughout town. I believe Director Pearson noted this, especially the French broom. Let me see here. There was also concern voiced regarding approval of the People's Self-Help Housing project on the Schoolhouse Lane that was approved by the Postal Commission. So concern is still being voiced about the availability of water for that project, as well as how this large development, which is roughly 33 units, and who knows how many vehicles or people living there, how this would affect the vegetation and the wildlife habitat nearby. With regard to the July meeting of the Forest Committee, they had Cal State Humboldt Forestry graduate Joaquin Quintana attend, and he's doing postgraduate work to become a registered professional forester. And he noted that there's three universities in the state where one can become a registered professional forester, up in Humboldt, as well as Berkeley, and here in Cal Poly. He discussed the availability of grant funding regarding forestry projects, and that Cal Fire themselves have many registered professional foresters, including here in our area and Alan Peters. So there was a discussion of forest manager here in Cambria, especially on the Fiscalini Ranch. FFRP Executive Director Kitty Connolly suggested contacting Cal Poly professors and perhaps having graduate students doing some assessment of our local forest, perhaps a project for studying the understory that was removed and how it's coming back, especially on the Fiscalini Ranch, or connecting with environmental science majors to do projects. It was also suggested that the Forest Committee contact Sarah Bisping. She was formerly of this area, I believe, at University of California, Santa Barbara. She's now a professor at University of Nevada at Reno. She has spoken before at Forest Committee meetings, and maybe having her graduate students be involved in the Cambria forestry projects. And finally, the Forest Committee is in need of a new director on their committee. And if you're interested, you might consider attending the next Forest Committee meeting, which is on Wednesday, August the 12th at 6:30 in the evening. With regard to my president's report, and Director Howell alluded to that, I'll go ahead and read the entire one. I imagine that just about everybody that is in attendance, whether it be participants or attendees, already knows this information, but I just thought you'd know what's been posted on the district website as well as on CambriaCA.org. So first off, I just want to mention the major concerns of here in Cambria. There's two of them. Of course, fire is one. But the availability and the escape route in case the fire is one, but the availability of water, especially having a dependable source of water in the summer months and moving into the fall season, is very important. So, of course, we had the meeting on June 25th regarding the coastal development permit for our water facility on San Simeon Creek Road. Of course, this facility is known by various names, the Emergency Water Supply Project, or the EWS, the Advanced Water Treatment Project, or AWPP, and the more familiar Sustainable Water Facility, or SWF. So at the meeting we had on June 25th, over 40 people were in attendance at the online Zoom meeting, the largest turnout that we've had at the district board meeting in many months. There were over three dozen public comments were read, either emails submitted or members of the public communicating verbally themselves at this meeting. Most people expressed support for the facility, feeling that the plant would provide water security, especially in drought years. Other folks that spoke were favorable that growth, meaning houses, more houses being built, would finally take place once the facility was approved for operation. Folks that spoke out in opposition to the plant, perhaps maybe just being used in serious drought emergency, which is what the plant was, the facility was originally committed for or permitted for. Their concerns were based as much on environmental concerns as others, as well as the cost of the plant. The coastal development permit has now moved forward to the county planning department for their consideration and possible approval. They may be making some adjustments to what we submitted to them. And at some point in the near future, perhaps 2 or 3 months down the road, this application is going to return to the board of CCSD Board of Directors for further discussion. And then it will move back to the Planning Commission, and then the Board of Directors, and ultimately the Coastal Commission. So I want to elaborate a little bit more, including clearing up any misunderstandings regarding the facility. First off, the facility, of course, was built in summer and fall of 2014, but it has yet to provide water of any consequence to our town. During the 6 years that it's been available, despite costing, of course, millions of dollars. So I just wanted to clear that up because there are people in this community that actually believe that we are receiving water from this facility. That is not factual. Meanwhile, over the years and at present, we still have various local, state, and federal agencies continuing to express concern over the impact the plant is having on the natural environment. And this is due basically to the fact the plant is in a 92-acre environmentally sensitive habitat area, or ESHA, not to mention the extreme amounts of brine waste that are produced when the plant operates that need to be trucked elsewhere, whether to South County or over to Kettleman City, creating, of course, further pollution and harm to the environment in the process. Also, water produced by the plant, which, of course, combines treated wastewater with water from the natural environment, is going to be extremely expensive, likely up to 3 times the amount normally incurred by the ratepayers of our community. And it's important to know that a lot of folks in our area, especially people that have just arrived here, aren't aware of these facts that I just mentioned. So I just want to point out that, of course, the most efficient and effective way to address the water needs of our town is through ongoing water conservation, which, of course, we've been doing for a number of years, many of us, including water collection and storage and water use and reuse at our homes. Of course, the repair and upgrade of the district's water infrastructure, which is alluded to by Director Pearson earlier. This would include water tanks and the piping water delivery system, and hopefully we'll be continuing to approach and improving these areas in the future. Now, of course, we've been fortunate in the past where we've had serious water challenges. Our community have always stepped up and cut back on their water usage. Cambrians continue to cultivate productive habits, and one would hope that the more recent arrivals to our town are going to be equally concerned in the water area of water conservation. There's two other items I want to talk about. The first one, I think many people that are attending this meeting today are aware of the fact that there are protests and actions that are now taking place for the past 3 weeks at the former location of our community skate park. Many folks of all ages are expressing their disappointment that no longer does the park exist, but that it was apparently torn down with little consideration for the needs of the youth of our community. People are equally upset that it appears that no effort is being made to replace and rebuild the park. At least that's the way it appears at this point, either at its former location, of course, across from the Veterans Hall, or perhaps on the East Ranch off of Rodeo Grounds Road. So I just want to mention that it was because of the deterioration of the park and therefore the potential danger of those using it, mainly the youth of our town as well as young people visiting from elsewhere, that the skate park was removed. Now, many folks have expressed disappointment that a greater effort wasn't made to maintain and improve the park, which is, of course, a legitimate expression of frustration. But right now, we're at a point as to how to move forward and meet the needs of the young citizens of our town. Folks have been, like I said, present at the old location of the skate park on Friday afternoons while the farmer's market is taking place. So you can go and visit there from 1 until 5 o'clock, voice your opinions, voice your support, maybe make a donation with regard to the building of a new skate park. You can also attend the Parks and Recreation and Open Space Commission meetings, or PROS, P-R-O-S. They have their meetings every first Tuesday of the month, beginning at 10 o'clock. And you can also speak out at our regular board meetings every second and third Thursdays, and the meetings begin at 2. And then finally, I want to mention, and this is kind of old news, but I haven't had a chance to present this in the last couple of months. So I think it's important to acknowledge that on late Monday afternoon, June 8th, nearly 200 Cambria residents of all ages, incomes, and backgrounds, including mothers with their children, came together in a peaceful manner to address the issue of racism in our country. Of course, this is also taking place at thousands of cities across our nation, and this is still continuing in many areas. Most everyone that attended this gathering in Cambria's West Village, brought a homemade sign expressing their individual feeling on this issue. So we gathered for an hour at Main Street and Cambria Drive, and that included kneeling for 8 minutes and 46 seconds to acknowledge the death of, I'm afraid I've forgotten his name, George Floyd. And then we did a march to and from Main Street and Windsor Boulevard. We had many people that drove by during this hour and a half, and they, I'd say about 95% honked their horns or waved to show support of the demonstration that took place and what it stood for. And I would say regarding our community, this was really a heartwarming display of togetherness of Cambrians. So that's my president's report and other reports. I'm just wondering, we don't necessarily have to ask for public comment, but if anyone is out there and wants to call in, would they be able to contact you, Haley, and make a comment?
Yes.
Okay. It looks like there's one person. It says here, total of one phone. Oh, I see. Never mind. Okay. So future agenda items, since we didn't get that far either at our meeting on July 16th, does anyone on the board or General Manager Weigold, anyone have any comments with regard to future agenda items?
Yes,
I do.
I do.
Yes, Director Pearson?
I think we do need to have a discussion about skate park and other athletic and recreational opportunities in our community. I think we need to move this forward even more quickly, maybe than PROS is able to do so. And we need to discuss how and would the CCSD be willing to help fund these efforts and how we would go about doing that. So I think that is one thing. And my second is that we need to have a discussion on the grant policy. And that needs to come before the board so that we can look at that. I would recommend that the general manager and his staff look at that policy and present a revised policy to us for our either approval or disapproval or revision or whatever. But I think we need to move forward on both of those items.
All right. Thank you, Director Pearson. You know, one of the reasons, if I could just mention this, that the skate park has become a bit controversial is that there's been two suggestions made as to what to do with the old site, which, you know, everything is torn down and it's just surrounded by barbed wire, which is a bit unsightly. But so there's been a proposal made, and perhaps I should have mentioned this in my president's report, a proposal made that we replace the skate park with a combination, what is called a soccer arena and basketball courts. obviously, the other option is actually building a new skate park, somewhat like what they have down in Cayucos or Morro Bay. So those are the two. That's a controversial issue that's taking place. And as Director Pearson recommended, probably the board needs to make this an agenda item to have more feedback from the community and perhaps more study as to how to move forward. So thank you, Director Pearson. So I don't see any other suggestions for future agenda items.
Director Howell has one.
Director.
Sorry, Mr. President, I didn't raise my blue hand, so you probably didn't see me. First of all, I concur. Concur with the suggestions made by Director Pearson. Those are sufficiently important that I'd like to see those. I'd like to see those at our first meeting, if possible, in the coming months. Because the sooner we get those taken care of, I think the better off everybody will, happier everyone will be. In addition, though, I'd like to an item that I think is of considerable importance that needs to be addressed sooner than later, perhaps at the next meeting or perhaps at our second meeting. We really do need to discuss procedures whereby a regular meeting can be canceled. Is this a difficult situation? I don't think there's any guidance in the bylaws regarding this, and yet having a regular meeting canceled by less than a majority of the board doesn't seem right to me. I think that we may need to even address whether we should continue to have two meetings a month or go back to one. I think this is a sufficiently important question, not as important as the other that Director Pearson raised, but I think before we go canceling any further regular meetings, we do need to address this, unless we cancel a regular meeting at a regular meeting. If we're going to do anything other than that, I really think we need a bylaw change. So I would like to see that on some future agenda, and that in the meantime that we do not cancel meetings without a board majority at a regularly scheduled or at a regularly noticed, a properly noticed board meeting. So that would be my recommendation for a future agenda item, and also my suggestion is how to proceed until we address that issue.
Well, Director Hall, I just want to say that in canceling the meeting, and it was kind of done in consensus with those of us at the agenda preparation meeting, meaning Vice President Seidel and legal counsel Tim Carmel and our general manager, Mr. Weigel, as well as myself. I was the one that initiated that, and I was in error in doing so, and I'll admit to that, especially because not only our board members are a little, well, let's put this, members of the public were a bit concerned as much as anything, so. But that we would open that for discussion at a future meeting. So thank you.
Thank you. May I tail on to your comment briefly, if you don't mind? I don't mean that as a criticism for you or the vice president or anybody. It's just something that we hadn't really considered. And the reason, and I'll just to let this go, but in a situation, you could have a situation where an executive committee of a board, without any concurrence with the rest of the board, cancels meeting upon meeting upon meeting, because they don't want the board to take any official action on some particularly important issue. This isn't happening here, but in terms of having a set of procedures which are help to govern most of many of the situations that might occur. So please don't take it as a criticism of what was done, but rather this is an indication where I think that there's a lack of clarity in our own bylaws as to how to proceed.
Well, let me discuss this. I did discuss this item with Director. Well, maybe I shouldn't mention this because that might be a Brown Act violation.
Probably better.
Well, I guess I can say that. Anyway, apparently it is a regulation that the board, as you stated, it needs to be a board decision at a meeting to cancel another meeting. So I think that's already a regulation. Anyway, I appreciate everybody attending this meeting, including the folks out there in the public, especially folks that are considered to be, continue to be involved over many years, and it's very much appreciated. So
before
Foggy right here. Yes, Director Howell, you have one more comment.
I'm sorry. I had a question for Mr. Carmel, and I don't know where to put it in the meeting, so forgive me if this is a little out of order. Mr. Carmel, is it sufficient if we have material to share with other board members and we can't get it into the packet? Is it sufficient to share that information via a screen sharing during our actual meetings so that the public can see what it is that we're looking at? Is that sufficient?
Yeah, yes, it is.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Just wanted to be sure on that one. So those of us who are struggling to get reports in time for the packet, should we fail, we can do a screen share and do it during the meeting. Okay. Thank you.
And I think it would also be valuable, thank you, to just post them at the district website. That would be effective as well. So, all right. Thank you, everyone. Sorry to intrude on your Monday morning, but have a very pleasant rest of the day, a pleasant rest of the week. Wear a mask like our legal counsel is right now, even if he is sitting alone in his own office. And everyone be safe, be well, be kind, considerate, and as loving as possible in these challenging times. And we'll see you at the next regular board meeting, of which the date escapes me, but it's the second Thursday in August at 2 in the afternoon. So many blessings. Have a pleasant day. Bye-bye.
Thank you.